And here we are back on WWGH Radio on this Wednesday, February the 19th, 2020. 13 minutes past the hour, and this morning we have a guest who I've wanted to have on for quite a while. A few months ago, this lady was brought to my attention, and we are glad we finally have her here this morning via telephone to discuss her run for Senate in the 26th District here in Ohio. A pleasure to welcome to these microphones Melissa Atkinson. Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Scott?
Doing well. How's the campaign trail going?
Oh, the campaign trail for the last 13 months has been incredibly energizing. Certainly not without obstacles when you're going against, you know, you're up against the establishment and one of the wealthiest members of the General Assembly. But, you know, we have the momentum and the energy of the people. We're talking about a grassroots campaign completely funded by the community, by the voters throughout the state of Ohio. So it's a different level of energy, quite a bit to keep up with.
Now, I think something interesting that a lot of people want to know is your background. Tell us where you grew up. Give us a little sketch about yourself.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in West Columbus. Wonderful, wonderful. My memories there with a working class family. My dad was a UAW factory worker. He was a Republican. But, you know, I lived, you know, for me, a very happy life. We had less than others and likely had a little more than some, but you know, I was very blessed to have the life that I did. Very close with my grandparents. They lived on 17th Avenue in Columbus, pretty rough area, and a trailer park, and I spent a lot of weekends with them camping and, you know, just being with family. And live in Marysville currently. I knew one thing, it's that I wanted to eventually have a life in the country. We were able to move from the west side of Columbus closer to my senior year in high school to Johnstown, Ohio, and it was the first time I had ever been exposed to rural America, and I knew from that point on that that's really where I wanted to make my life once I had a family. And so now I'm in Marysville, Ohio, live on a small farm. We have cows and chickens and cats and dogs and anything else that makes its way here, and my two youngest sons, Royce and Cross, 3 years old and 10 years old, they're here with us. And then I have two older boys who are out of the house, one in the military and one who works in the insurance industry.
Now, when you were growing up in that environment, was there something you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, it certainly wasn't a politician, I can tell you that. actually, my interest when I was a little kid, I was really into archaeology, and I belonged to this group called the Rock Hounds. I had a teacher that was into, you know, fossils, and that was a big part of my life in my elementary school years. And then in fifth grade, I realized that the kids needed to have a voice at our school, so I developed our first school presidency that I ran for, and ended up getting elected, and we established a little council of students who also ran campaigns, and still friends with all of those kids from Columbus Public Schools today. They're still supporters, despite living out of the district. And, you know, so I'm not, I guess, from that perspective, I say I didn't dream to be a politician, but there are certainly some interesting indicators from the very, very early ages.
Now, when you got out of high school, what was your life like at that point? What did the world look like to you?
Well, it probably looked a little bit different to me than it did to my buddies, mostly because my senior year I was actually able to get the principal and one of my teachers, who was a really fantastic teacher, recognized that the traditional school setting was likely not the best place for me to be. I was also diagnosed with a rare disease during my high school years, so I started developing, the disease is called fibrous dysplasia, and I started developing tumors on the left side of my face and skull and behind my eye socket. So I had some deformation and a lot of surgeries that I went through during those years. But by the time I made it to my senior year, you know, I was struggling at that time, obviously, because I had my medical condition. So I was in pain often and had headaches quite a bit, had a difficult time in school concentrating. But luckily to this teacher, I had an opportunity to participate in a homeschooling program where I would get up and I was educated from 5 o'clock in the morning until 7 a.m. to finish my last couple classes. certainly wasn't the best student, and then I was able to go into the workforce where I was able to thrive and do very well. I worked for a large international outfit in the supply chain and logistics background and just worked really hard taking any assignment that I could to learn. I worked in human resources and then was recruited to other large international organizations. So by the time I was 24 years old, well, by the time I was 19, I was a homeowner, was able to save my money, buy my first home at 19, and then was recruited to work internationally and all across the United States building world-class businesses as a human resource professional. So while my buddies were in college, for those who went to college and partying, you know, their lives away, I was entering gardening contests with women my grandma's age and homeownership and working.
How do you think that changed the trajectory of your life?
Well, I mean, I lost my dad at a very young age. He passed away at 45, and we were extremely close. In fact, that's where a lot of my mannerisms and interests come from. You know, that certainly shaped my life in a major way. It was a tragic scenario. But having to grow up very quickly, you know, take care of myself, fund my own way, understood that if I didn't perform in the workplace, I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage, my car payment, my bills. So it's at times difficult for me to understand why people are unable to be self-sufficient. I've had to fight for everything I've had my entire life.
That fight, what has that instilled in you that you, let's say, would help you in the current situation you're in running for office?
Well, you know, when you come from, you know, a place like the west side of Columbus and you go to, you know, very integrated schools and you're around different types of people, you have exposure to things that other folks who maybe lived a more sheltered life didn't have exposure to, you recognize, you know, what it is that you want to be in life, whatever that shapes up to be. You know, you want to be self-sufficient, and you want to be able to, you know, take care of a family and to take care of yourself. And, you know, when I left the private sector and my husband and I started businesses, I knew what it was like to have tough years in business and to have flat years and to liquidate assets, to make payrolls. And, you know, if you had a bad year and you had to get on tax payment plans to maintain all the different institutions of government you're paying, you know, it's a different perspective than most of the very wealthy politicians that we have in office now who were either, you know, like my opponent, an heir, you know, to immense wealth, or somebody who didn't have to live through struggle and fight. By the time I was in my 20s, you know, I had been married, divorced, you know, traveled the world for business, homeowner. I just have a different perspective on life, likely, than most people.
Now, when you say growing up on the west side of Columbus, for people maybe here in Marion who've never been there or live there, what are the characteristics? What does that mean?
Well, when you talk about growing up on the west side, we're very tight-knit people. So we could go years without talking to each other, but if we needed something, there was a real sense of community. And although we may not have had, you know, as much financially as other areas, you know, throughout the state, what we did have was each other, and we would fight for each other, and we would take care of each other. And even when I ran for office, you know, for U.S. Senate, I mean, I could always count on hosting an event, and there would be people that I hadn't, you know, seen in years and years who would come, and they were always from the west side. It's just a different sense of community. I like to say, you know, tough people. I mean, I always say the west side doesn't raise any punks. And, you know, so you were faced with different scenarios growing up that perhaps other people weren't, and you had to learn how to be tough, and you had to learn how to stand up for yourself. And I was never a very big person. I'm only 5'2" now, you know. So you just had to learn how to position yourself, whether that was through your voice or whether through other means, you know, to have clout and to be respected.
Now, you're living this life. You're a homeowner. You are a business owner. Why do you decide to get into politics?
Well, it started back in around 2016, 2017. You know, I knew what the healthcare markets were like in the private sector. because I was responsible for negotiating deals for different manufacturing organizations across the United States, and certainly I knew the Ohio markets, and Ohio had one of the richest healthcare markets, you know, free market systems, you know, in the United States. Fast forward and introduced the Affordable Care Act, government intervention in the regulatory environment, and by this time I was a small business owner. I had a son at the time who was diagnosed with a genetic condition that I unfortunately passed along to him, and I felt the very real and intrusive nature of what government intervention and policy did through a socialist medicine. And so to be a parent and to have providers not take your insurance, and you're losing, you know, your savings and everything you worked for to make copays and deductibles, and for insurance you couldn't use that the government said you had to have, it really sparked and ignited, you know, furious anger inside of me. So I started reporting, you know, live using social media and different forums, and ultimately was recognized by the Trump administration, flown to Washington, where I told my story, and the communications team in Washington thought I was able to articulate the issues effectively. So I was on Fox News and met the president and the vice president, was there for national events and healthcare listening sessions. And I realized at that point in time that for too long, good people have stood by and allowed politicians to legislate our rights away and in favor for negotiations and political contributions. I knew it was on both sides of the aisle, that it wasn't just Democrats, it wasn't just Republicans. It was failures from everyone, and so I literally became a self-taught politician from those trips when I came back to Washington. Had to study the financials, learn the FEC regulations, build a grassroots coalition using my business background and entrepreneurial skills, and I launched a U.S. Senate race. I was projected to come in at less than 1%. I was given no consideration by the Ohio Republican Party or the establishment, and came in at nearly 14% with over 100,000 votes, in third place out of several other gentlemen, and I was outspent by $9 million. So that's how I really hit the political scene, but I was always involved, you know, in my community and through conservative activism. And when this position came open and I realized who was running, and it was a very moderate Republican owned by the special interests, I didn't want more of the same. So that's kind of the story in a nutshell.
Running the first time, what did you learn about how to run a campaign and what running for office is really all about?
Well, frankly, the voting public has been led to believe, you know, that you have a choice in the matter over who serves you, and to a large extent you don't if you're not an informed voter. Both the Ohio Republican Party and the Ohio Democratic Party operate off of a system where they hand select, they prop up candidates, they will outspend, outfundraise, and run the worst campaigns to teach these grassroots candidates never to try to have a seat at the table again. So as soon as you can grapple with the fact and deal with the fact that your own party, as well as the Democratic Party, doesn't have an interest in true patriots or military parents or entrepreneurs or small business owners or farmers, citizen legislators, as soon as you can accept that fact and know that they will do everything they can to make an example out of you, you know how to be as crafty as possible to run a strategic campaign. You have to understand who the players in the game are. You have to understand the power of the grassroots movement, the power of the people. Find different capabilities within your volunteers, and you just run your heart out.
Now, at some point in everybody's life, who's involved in politics, certainly who's running for office, they have to make a decision. Are they a Democrat? Are they a Republican? Are they an independent? What are they? You at some point made the decision to be a Republican. What does being a Republican mean to you?
Well, there's different types of Republicans. You have to understand that. I'm a constitutional conservative Republican, so I have no desires or interest to negotiate the constitutional rights of the people away in favor of political correctness and an agenda. So that would mean a constitutional conservative follows the Constitution. We recognize that decisions such as Roe versus Wade, that's an unconstitutional decision, and it's design. It was a court opinion. Courts make opinions. They don't make laws. You know, I am a post-abortive woman. I lived through a first trimester abortion as a 16-year-old girl, so I understand more than any politician could the horrors and what goes on inside of Planned Parenthood. So when I say that I'm pro-life, I don't mean I want to regulate death and use babies as political footballs. I mean I'm an abolitionist. I mean that Planned Parenthood should have never been operating in the first place as a court decision of Roe versus Wade. Ohio's under no mandate to let these slaughterhouses operate. So your regular establishment politician, they'll cheer over certain bills that regulates death, you know, from a certain, you know, point of conception, whereas I say, no, we abolish it completely. When we abolished slavery, we didn't do it through regulating slavery. We did it through a bloody war, and we abolished slavery. It's the same thing in the same way that I feel with abortion. When it comes to the Second Amendment, I have no interest in introducing new regulatory reforms or an environment where we could infringe upon a well-regulated militia. I've been a concealed carry cardholder since 2009. I am for constitutional carry. I am for stand your ground, you know, and I don't support current proposals being crammed down the people's throats. When we talk about the regulatory environment in the state of Ohio, we should be free as entrepreneurs and job creators to do what we need to do without constantly seeing who's digging in our pockets for different payment. Republicans look at it a little bit differently. They're willing to negotiate that away. So I am with the Republican Party, but I am a constitutional conservative, and that's something different than someone such as my opponent.
Your opponent in this Republican primary, Bill Reinecke, what are the biggest differences between you and he? You pointed out some there, but what, in your opinion, when somebody, a Republican, goes to vote in this primary, what should they look at the most? What are the biggest differences?
Well, number one, I'm 100% funded by the people. So I've had to raise cash contributions over the last 13 months of my life, strictly going to the voter. I didn't go to special interests. I didn't go to lobbyists. I didn't go to the big donors who control the legislature currently. I went to the people so I could have accountability to them. Whereas, in stark contrast, my opponent is 100% funded by the special interests, the lobbying communities, the PACs, the super PACs. And so it's very easy to see why I campaign the way that I do. I do 3 and 4 events a day. You know, I run on very little sleep, and this has been going on for over a year of my life, touching the hands of the voters and talking about their issues because they've been forgotten about. Politicians will come out and they'll say things like, jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, jobs, yes, but what about the skills gap that we have currently because the educational system is failing our children and there aren't opportunities of apprenticeship programs and we don't have enough opportunities of skills-based programs to get the workforce ready to work? Ohio is one of the most overregulated states, ranking number 4 just under New York and California. You can't do anything to create a vibrant jobs environment and a strong labor pool until you address the regulatory environment and the entitlement scenario that makes for many people not working a better situation than working. My opponent is a John Kasich disciple. I am a Trumper. He is a never-Trumper. And he endorsed John Kasich in the primary, was a big donor to Kasich and to the Republican machine. That is the complete opposite of me. So, you know, you have one gentleman who was born into immense wealth and likely doesn't know what it's like to struggle and suffer and have to claw your way to the top, fall down, claw back again, versus somebody like me. It is a complete night and day difference campaign, clear down from the fact that I'm a woman, he's a man. I have kids in the public school system. He does not. I had a kid that I sent off to war for this country. So when I talk about veterans issues, I get it. It's just a completely different campaign.
You know, this has become a new term in the last, 3.5 years, a Trumper, because we do hear a never Trumper and we hear a Trumper. Uh-huh. What is the definition of that to you?
Well, for me, Trump is really what inspired the populist movement. He's what inspired people like me to recognize that the politicians have sold us out in favor of special interests. And so what we've realized with the populist movement, and the populist movement is what ended up getting President Trump elected. That's why you had so many Democrats and Republicans, you know, coming together to say, we need the betterment for the country. We want someone who's owned by the people. And he really spoke to that. So when you say you're a Trumper, you are somebody who was with the president from the beginning. You are somebody who was with him in the Republican primary. You are somebody who was with him in 2016. You were somebody who was out campaigning and door knocking for him and making homemade signs when the Republican establishment counted him out. You are a different type of person, candidate, an individual than what the establishment offers. Whereas my opponent, you know, 100% funded by the special interest, the donors, he is the swamp, the Trumper versus the swamp. That's the easiest way to describe it.
Now, when it comes to this particular race, this Republican primary, there have been some endorsements, and then there have been some people who have not endorsed. And at this point, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the people with the Trump campaign have not endorsed anybody in this particular primary. Is that correct?
That is correct. The Trump campaign does not intend to endorse. The RNC has made that very clear just to the Cleveland Plain Dealer yesterday that they're not going to endorse in this race. You know, other folks have endorsed. Where my endorsements are concerned, whenever people say, well, who endorses you, I tell them the most staunch conservative organizations, certifiably conservative organizations in the state of Ohio that have the greatest influence on legislation, organizations such as the Ohio Right to Life Action Coalition. That's an abolitionist or a, you know, stop abortion movement, not a regulation movement. When I talk about Ohio Value Voters, that is a group where you have to put your policy in writing and stand by them. You can't just call yourself a conservative and market yourself to the people as that. You have to be certifiably a conservative candidate through the your life's works and your political policy position. So, you know, when you ask, you know, how many people have donated to my campaign, the thousands of people who have contributed, you know, those are the endorsements that I receive. I'm concerned about the endorsements of the people more so than anything else.
When it comes to the Trump campaign, and this is the last question about that, because I want to talk about the Republican Party, because they've done some endorsements themselves, which is interesting. You were using a picture with President Trump.
Yes.
In your campaign literature, and
yes,
the head of the reelection campaign of President Trump in Ohio asked you to not do that, is my understanding, because they weren't endorsing anybody. Is that basically what happened?
Well, I mean, it, you know, let's dig a little bit deeper. I get a letter in the mail with a Virginia address shipped out from Virginia, Ohio, with a handwritten scribbled label made where my name was misspelled. I had a folded up copy on crooked letterhead and a signature that did not match Michael Glassner's. Our attorneys have been in touch, trying to get in touch with the campaign, the Trump reelection campaign, to no avail. Interestingly enough, my opponent had a nice, crisp version of that letter, not folded, that he was able to upload to his website. Listen, the Trump reelection campaign folks are tied in with the RNC and the establishment. The establishment has endorsed my opponent despite the fact that they said in written emails, text messages, and in-person conversations with handshakes and witnesses that they would not get involved with endorsement in the primary. They are literally doing everything they can in an effort to sway the voters' voice in this race. My opponent launched a website, melissaackison.com, where they fuel it with half-truths and this letter and Trump. I mean, it's absurd and ridiculous. And my response is this. I've never claimed that the president endorses me. In fact, anytime I use my photographs from my visits to the White House, that's me saying that I endorse the president. They're not coming down. I'll use them how I see fit. I own those photos just as other politicians use them in the same way, both male and female politicians across the United States, yet they're not receiving letters from, you know, Michael Glassner that we've still not been able to confirm. So it's a very interesting situation with that letter. Very desperate, desperate move on my opponent's behalf in the establishment.
It's very interesting because Michael Glassner, I would assume, if he did not do this, would want to make it known that he did not do this, because it's been written up in several publications now.
Yeah, I would assume the same. You have to remember, this is a state Senate race. This isn't a federal Senate race. It's not a congressional race. I don't know that they're overly concerned about a Ohio Senate District 26 race, to be real frank.
When we and we'll move on from that, because I think the Republican Party in Ohio, that's more of an interesting topic, because they have endorsed in this primary Bill Reinecke, even though you say they had said they wouldn't do this. They did this in the last governor's race. We had Mary Taylor on and Governor DeWine, then Attorney General DeWine on. They endorsed Governor DeWine, Attorney General DeWine in the primary. This seems to be something the Republicans do more than the Democrats, at least in Ohio. Why do you think that happened?
Well, I think they have an agenda to fill. They have commitments that they made from the donor class. They have puppets that they can control, and that they will be able to rest assured that they will vote a certain way, whether that's the governor's agenda or or the special interest agenda. When you get somebody who comes in and who can say, nope, I can think independently for my own, I don't owe anybody anything, I owe the people, you know, my performance, makes a big, big difference. The problem is they didn't expect me to get the donor base, the strong, you know, farmer and, you know, your regular conservative voter base and donor base that I did, and they didn't know what to do.
So why do you think the Republican Party does this more than the Democratic Party? Because I would think the Democratic Party has people they have to cowtail to as well.
Well, I think if you look at the national level and what they're doing to Bernie Sanders right now, I think you see clearly what the DNC is willing to do to throw off a primary. I'm sure that there are instances in the Democratic Party where they've gotten involved and they've endorsed. I don't follow those politics as much. I have friends on both sides of the aisle, but there's corruption in central committees of the Democrats just as equally as there is for the Republicans. The Republicans are very much hypocritical. They run campaigns on Democrats stacking elections, but when they involve themselves in primaries so aggressively to squelch the voice and the will of the people, and they dump these attack ads and these campaigns to not only just ruin your chances, their interest is to make an example of you and to ruin your life in every aspect. You know, your children have to go to school and be made fun of after these ads have, you know, been on television all day and mailers are sent out about their mommy and saying nasty things about mom and dad. You know, your business relationships are impacted. They want to send a loud, strong message to other people. Don't think about it. Don't even think about it. That's why this race is so important.
What impact does it have? Because we've all said this, campaigns in the last 3 or 4 years have become so nasty. It is awful. I can't imagine what it would be like to run for office and have kids in school and have a husband and have a wife and face this stuff that is put out there. What does it do to your life?
Well, for me, I've been through a lot of difficulty. Like I said, you know, by the time I was, you know, 24 years old, I experienced major tragedy and death in my family. I was diagnosed with an incurable disease that disfigured my face. You know, I had lived through life in different circumstances than other people, and I had to learn how to be tough. So for me, I'm a very strategic thinker and planner and a one step ahead of you type of character. I'm a nonstop thinker and strategist. So for me, I mean, you would be lying if you said it isn't, you know, at some level, I guess, emotionally distressing, but I have a good way of compartmentalizing those emotional parts, and it fuels my fire to aggressively fight harder, aggressively campaign harder, aggressively fundraise more. So I'm a different type of lady, I think, than most candidates who have to live through this. You know what it does to my husband, who obviously has me on a pedestal and thinks I'm a little princess. It's very difficult for him when people show up to events or they call me names or, you know, they say sick things about me online, or people are constantly trying to trip you up and do things and, you know, harm your business relationships. We had people calling our business partners, you know, saying horrible things that upset our business partners with them, not with us. And then you have little kids, you know. You've got the fact that you have a 10-year-old who knows exactly what's going on, and he hears discussions, and he sees mailers, and he watches things on TV. So it's been a tough life lesson for them to learn that absolute power is absolute corruption, and you know, anything that people are willing to do harm to mommy is all in an effort to maintain power. They don't want people like us to be able to have a seat at the table. So you know, it's certainly been hard, you know, mentally and emotionally, but I'm pretty good at putting those things behind me, you know, knuckling up and being ready to roll.
Is there any way we can ever get to a campaign where it is just about the issues and no personal attacks?
Well, I mean, I'm running a campaign just about the issues and not on personal attacks. I think when you start running a gutter campaign, like with what you saw my opponent put out yesterday, you know, where they are depicting me as a West Side gangster, you know, bad-mouthing me, putting out half-truths about my husband and I, about taxes, about, you know, issues with business, I think it reeks of desperation. I think the voter sees that. I think for the Republican voter and for the conservatives, I think that this is very reminiscent of the Hillary Clinton-Trump battle, where Hillary Clinton, you know, the dossier and all the things they did to the president and the collusion. That's what they view my opponent as, an establishment brat who's involved with collusion and gutter politics. You know, the best advice I have to people is simple. You want candidates to represent you, you better get involved. You better know your candidates. You better write checks. You better help out. You better door knock. You better canvass. You better make phone calls. You better play an active role, because you're losing your republic to people who don't care about you. You don't matter to them. You don't donate to them. You don't help them. You're the peasants that are only good enough to live under failed policy and pay taxes.
This whole thing, you brought it up there about the West Side, and I think there is a mailer that was sent out by the Reinicke campaign.
Yeah.
What is that depicting? What are they trying to say there?
Well, what they've done is they've taken half-truths. They've taken emails and help that we sent to our congressmen as it related to government overreach with a payroll tax payment plan that my husband and I were on the year that a company filed bankruptcy and stiffed us for over $300,000. I can't think of a business owner who hasn't went through a tough year in business to where either a large client doesn't pay them and they have to liquidate assets, or potentially go on a tax payment plan for something like payroll taxes. So what they show you are private emails, and where we've already paid this program off, but private emails about a tax payment plan. And then they go further by not telling you that, well, yeah, the tax payment plan was in the fact that we had a client that filed bankruptcy and didn't pay us. They didn't tell you that another business partner of ours that we were in business with as another subcontractor, that he killed himself because this contractor filed bankruptcy and didn't pay those he was supposed to pay. The little guys didn't get paid. They don't tell you that part of the story. They don't tell you that when we were fined $4,000 by the Ohio Engineers and Surveyors, that the maximum fine was only $500, and I was down in the House of Representatives and in the Senate meeting with legislators saying, how is this happening to me? Why is it, you know, why are they allowed to assess these egregious fines and investigate my company, all while I was running for U.S. Senate, and then ultimately fine us, you know, far more what the ORC, you know, specifies. I'm not going to take that lying down. I'm not just going to pay somebody because the government institution said so. I'm going to fight back. I'm going to do what I have to do. So there are signs of the story and half-truths that they're not interested in telling, because their goal is to paint a picture of, you know, they've got me on the front throwing up a W. That's for the West Side of Columbus. I also go to the West Side Free Will Baptist Church. That's our sign at church. They want to depict me as this rogue, you know, gangster character who's out, you know, cripping and thugging during the day, and you know, that's not the case. And people who know me, they know that.
Interestingly enough, we're here in Marion, and I had never really seen anything like this. Now, I'm not saying it never happened before, but I had never seen in a local Senate race the Marion County Republican Party get involved to a certain degree. And to the certain degree, just, I mean, you obviously saw the letter, and the letter is this. It's very short. It was February 13th, 2020. It says, as chairman of the Marion County Republican Party, I believe those seeking a public office should refrain from personal attacks. Slash and burn comments are unacceptable. Throughout much of the campaign for the 26th
District, Ohio Senate seat, I have observed behavior I believe compromises the integrity and values of our great Republican Party. Certainly candidates can disagree on issues and policy, but when comments are made with malicious, spiteful, or harmful intent, they are unacceptable. I urge candidate Melissa Atkinson to refrain from personal attacks for the remainder of this campaign. Personal attacks against those who disagree with her are not acceptable within the Marion County Republican Party, signed Chairman Robert Schultz. And this went out on Facebook, and it was in the local newspaper as well. What is Robert Schultz, for those living here in Marion, talking about? Have you talked to him? Has he talked to you?
I've had one conversation with Robert Schultz since he issued that letter. I have made attempt to contact him. I think Robert Schultz is, you know, frankly, he's a puppet of the establishment. You know, he's doing and taking the marching orders that he's been given, and it backfired in a terrible way. I mean, you saw the backlash. There was over 300 comments from people ripping him. Lucky for me, I have an extremely loyal and large following, one of the largest of any Republicans in the state of Ohio, certainly of the conservative movement. And so, again, you know, this is you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. That's Robert Schultz's attempt to say, you know, put out something publicly that, again, unfortunately, or fortunately for me, backfired. You know, the Marion Star covered it. I believe it made front page news. You know, I think Mr. Schultz is extremely dishonest in his statement. I'm not the one who purchased a domain name on a website, you know, bearing my opponent's name for attack ads. I'm not the one who bought an extensive radio ad buy that plays all day long attacking me. I'm not the one who purchased a large commercial media ad buy on television, and I'm not the one who sent out a mailer yesterday. You know, as a strong woman, if you come at me, I'm going to come for you. You push me, I'll push you down, and you won't get back up. And so I think they've likely never seen someone who's willing to, most people take what they dish out, in other words. And so I think the public sees what's going on. I mean, I have overwhelming support. It backfired in a huge way on him. And it's an effort to make sure that I don't show up to their events, that I don't have access to voters. That was a spanking that he thought he was going to put out. But Bob Schultz certainly has quite a bit in his closet with his professional career as an officer and otherwise that aren't necessarily a shining beacon of light or exemplary by any means. And they had a felon running the Republican Party prior to Bob Schultz becoming the puppet. So people know that.
When you spoke with Mr. Schultz, what was the tenor of the conversation that it came after this letter?
Oh, no, it was prior to this
letter.
And, you know, it was literally a five-minute discussion at a Marion County event. I discussed the fact that we had several millennials who were very involved in my campaign, the need to drive that type of energy into the Republican Marion Party. I had a couple of millennials with me that evening who volunteer on my campaign. It was a very, you know, blasé conversation, very vanilla. That's my only that's my only extent of communication with him.
When it comes to the media, you talked about the media buys and the Marion Star putting that on the front page and how the media operates. What do you think the how has the media treated you? Let's put it that way.
How is the media treated? Well, the media is likely just like any other industry. You have good doctors, you have bad doctors. You have good lawyers, you have bad lawyers. You have good people and bad people. And I try to treat the media how they treat me. There are reporters that I will work with that have been into my home, that have treated me well and have been extremely fair without bias on both sides. I've had other reporters that have a very clear agenda as to what it is they're doing, and I don't work with reporters like that. I don't have time for that. I've got a campaign to run, and I've got to get out and do what I need to do. So I think, by and large, the media is not trusted by the people. I think that's largely sponsored, in fact, of what the president went through for his election, and people viewed the media as very biased, very dishonest. And I think there are very few credible news sources. These days, I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to that stuff. I'm not campaigning to 3 and 4 stops a day. When I get home, I've got cows and chickens and children to take care of and a business to run and a husband. So, you know, I don't spend a whole lot of time getting real wrapped up in that.
When it comes to this district, what can you do for the people in Marion? What are the big issues?
Well, let's be honest. Ohio leads the charge in human trafficking. We are still leading the charge in the opiate epidemic. Ohio is one of the most overregulated states. Our welfare, entitlement, and Medicaid systems are 52% of the state budget. We came in 2019 closed with record spending and negative job growth. We have a governor who's cramming an unconstitutional gun proposal down our throats. Our schools are failing and our people are overtaxed and working like a dog for the privilege of living like one. My emphasis, obviously, in the long term is abolishing abortion. That comes through education of the general public and helping them to understand that courts, you know, make opinions. They don't make laws. The legislature does. You know, my immediate goal is, or my immediate need is to make sure that the citizens are protected from unconstitutional gun laws. It's the reason you see me in seven counties working to make them sanctuary through resolution and working through commissioners so that they are sanctuary from Senate Bill 221. I was down testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 187. That's a child exploitation bill, keeping children safe from gender transition ideology and radical ideology from coming into the school systems. I want an emphasis on children learning and our schools performing where teachers can teach, not teaching to test. So there's so much that we have to do here in the district, but the first thing is to be a loud voice for the people, and that's something they haven't had in a long time. You take an area like Marion, a once bustling metropolis of opportunity and hope, and through poor policy and a regulatory environment, the opiate epidemic and everything that's going on socially, you know, and Marion is in the situation it is in today. There's opportunity there with the infrastructure and just with the with the transportation route where we fall there, the things that we can do to bring business back, you've got to have the right person with the right interest. And at this point, I don't think people are overly concerned about Democrat, Republican, or otherwise. They see a woman who's in their community coming to their locations, meeting with them, holding events. Four debates have been scheduled. My opponent backed out of all those debates. People want to see, how does this person communicate? How will they represent me on the Senate floor? What are they going to do to protect me? And they see that in me. We've got a lot of work to do, and we have to have very honest dialogue about how the state of Ohio is operating. We can't go out and do rah-rah, hey, everything's great. No, everything's not great, and the people of Marion know that, and we have issues to address.
You mentioned Governor DeWine and his gun proposal a few minutes ago. What do you make of the job of Governor Mike DeWine so far?
I think that he likely has forgotten that by and large he was elected by the people. And I understand that there has to be some give and some take. But to immediately enter into office and propose not only a reckless refugee resettlement program despite the will of the people, but simultaneously introduce a gun grab program when I just named off multiple issues that the state is facing, is likely directionally not what the people are looking for. I think people are very frustrated. I think Republicans are frustrated. I think Democrats are frustrated, Libertarians and Independents. You know, I'm not overly thrilled. Some of the things that he's done, of course, just like with anyone, I'm very happy that he has put some support behind Senate Bill 249. That's the Senate bill that protects the OSU wrestlers who were raped, molested, and fondled throughout Dr. Strauss's tenure. Things like that, I think he's done an excellent job with. But immediately coming in with tax hikes and otherwise, I don't think that's what the people were expecting.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, the OSU wrestler scandal at this point, wrestling scandal, because it is going on and it continues to go on, and it involves our representative here in Marion, Jim Jordan, who's become very public on national television as of late. What do you make of that whole thing at this point?
Well, I think due process always has to play out for whatever allegations there are. However, I'll tell you, I'm actually personal friends with some of the men who lived through that, one of them being the captain of the wrestling team at the time. I don't think phone records lie. I don't think witness corroboration from credible sources lie. I'm very disappointed that I see Jim Jordan beating his chest for the president, and while we appreciate the work he did with the impeachment trials, his energy and efforts could certainly be used for House Bill 249 to shine a light on what these men lived through, but we're just not seeing that from him. So when he got involved in my race, endorsed my opponent, who is rated the most moderate in this Senate race and who was a disciple of John Kasich and the establishment, he got involved in a state Senate race. That raised a lot of eyebrows because people know the work I've done and the people that I'm affiliated with related to House Bill 249 had almost felt like revenge politics. My life is to be with the victims. Whether I'm down testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 187 to keep children safe from exploitation and the things I uncovered, you know, with that particular bill and was heavily involved with, or whether it's protecting these men. I'm a mother. It's what I do. I aggressively protect people. Always have, always will. My concern is not to protect other politicians. It's to make sure that victims and the people have a voice. So, you know, Senate Bill 24, House Bill 249, upon being elected, after I'm elected on March 17th, that'll be a primary goal and a focus of mine is to champion that bill.
You know, Melissa, in our final few moments here, it's interesting because when people talk about this race, because it does encompass some of Marion, people say this race is nasty. This race has been a tough, angry race. There's been a lot of barbs thrown. Why is that the perception of the race, the primary, between you and Bill Reinecke?
Again, you know, Bill Reinecke's like a Bloomberg or, you know, akin to a Hillary Clinton. They believe that the funding from the special interests and donors allow them to stay out of the limelight to have to answer the difficult questions. Whereas you have a candidate such as myself focused on these very difficult issues and the people are very riled up. People are more involved politically now than they ever have been. I don't think it's necessarily that I'm some kind of special character or that there's anything, special about me. I simply think it's because I am a vocal supporter of the people and the issues that mean something to them. So when you have public debate and you have constituents who will be my constituents, taking time off of work to get involved in the process, show up to debates, show up to ask the candidates the hard issues, and you have a candidate hiding behind an attack website, establishment cash, and special interests, that is going to fire people up. This is the people's race. They see me as their candidate and their people. And again, I'm running against one of the wealthiest members of the Ohio Republican Party. He can write $500,000 checks to the Republican establishment. That's important to the establishment to get other swamp Republicans elected. That's not something I can do, and it's not something I would do. I believe that candidates need to go out, campaign on their merits, run aggressive campaigns, raise their cash, and answer to the people, because we work for them. It's not the other way around. So you sprinkle multiple components and multiple different, you know, folks that I'm fighting, you know, and that's what leads you to the race that this is. People are very frustrated. And when they see a woman who stands for them, who has the voice they have and who's lived through the issues they have, they realize, wait a minute, we're not good enough to just live through your failures. We can do something about it with this candidate. And it's going to make people fired up.
Melissa, final question, and I certainly do appreciate your time this morning and you calling in, but I think you're exactly right to the point that you have to speak directly to the voters, and that's who's listening right now, and this is live, and, you know, I think that's the best way to do it. It's not something somebody writes or somebody puts out. It's not an attack piece. But because of this race, for the way you've been painted, as you said, as this West Side person who maybe has done crazy things and is unhinged and says awful stuff and has to have other chairmen of Republican parties call on you to stop the attack ads, for those people who have painted you that way, speaking directly to the voter, what do you say to the voters out there who have that perception of you because you can't, your campaign doesn't have the money to buy the ads to fight that sort of thing?
I think that the voters are incredibly intelligent, and I think that's one thing that the establishment doesn't give them credit for. I think when they receive attack mailers of disparaging, you know, commentary about me, I think that they view it as no different than what Hillary Clinton did to President Donald Trump, who couldn't be controlled by the establishment and the special interests. I think the people who are desperate for a change see value, tremendous value in a candidate such as myself. And for the people who are initiating these types of attacks. You know, I would be afraid of me if I were you too, because after I get elected, it's likely going to be very problematic when I point out publicly, you know, where the deficiencies are within the party apparatus. And so, you know, they're very desperate. They're scared, very submissive to me when I'm in the room. My opponent walks out the back door. He fights behind a computer screen and political operatives. You know, what is he going to do on the Senate floor? What has he done as a representative? He's done nothing as a representative other than be a nuisance and a funder. But you can't fight back like that with websites and attack ads. You've got to stand on the Senate floor and negotiate on behalf of the people. And that's what our folks are looking for. These are incredibly, incredibly intelligent voters, and they see through what's going on.
Melissa Atkinson, Republican candidate for Senate in the 26th District. Melissa, I hope this was a good time for you. I enjoyed having you on, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
It was great, and I would encourage everybody to follow my campaign on Facebook at Melissa Atkinson for Senate, and my last name is A-C-K-I-S-O-N, and more importantly, go to my website and take a look at my policy positions, contribute, join the movement, help where you can. Let's take our republic back one vote at a time.
Thank
God
you.
Bless.
Thank you, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
I'm the man with the...
Melissa Atkinson. And now...
Charlie Evers is right around the corner, so stay tuned.
107.1 FM. They're great!
Meadows Lawn Care and Landscaping is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107 FM, Ohio. Telephone